Ohio has a new law that will increase penalties for owners of aggressive dogs that attack and seriously injure people, and a case before the Ohio Supreme Court that could change how landlords handle their tenants' pets. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me in this recorded interview to talk about the new law and the state Supreme Court case are Ohio State Representative Kevin Miller, a Newark Republican, Cincinnati Animal Care Chief Dog Warden Beth Ward, and Cincinnati Enquirer reporter Laura Bischoff. Thank you all so much for being here today. So, Laura, I want to start with you. Last month, Governor DeWine signed into law this overhaul of Ohio's vicious dog law. What are the biggest changes in the law?
Well, for one thing, it gets rid of the one free kill, which is, Lucy, your dog gets out and kills your neighbor's kid in the backyard, and I'm the judge on the case. I can say, Fluffy didn't mean it. You can keep Fluffy under these conditions. Under the new law, Fluffy gets out and kills someone, Fluffy will be euthanized. It also clarifies that the dog wardens have the authority to seize a dog after an attack right from the get-go. It was a little kind of unclear, and different dog wardens interpreted it differently about whether or not after following an attack, if the dog could remain in the owner's house. It also increases penalties. I think it's easier to, bring more justice to the victims of these vicious attacks.
Representative Miller, state lawmakers have been trying for years to reform this law. What do you think made the difference this time?
Well, I think that we were very surgical with how we attacked the issues in this. And it started for me when I met with my local dog warden in Licking County, Larry Williams. And we took a look at kind of the whole section of law and some of the issues and problems that both dog wardens and the prosecutors were having. So we did some cleanup with it. And then Laura did a really good job there of just kind of explaining what the law does, but we were careful to make sure that it wasn't really expansive and addressed each and everything, and that we didn't increase penalties just blanket across the board. We wanted to make sure that we were concentrating on the very worst cases so that we could get something across the finish line. And fortunately, we were able to do that.
And Representative Miller, you mentioned meeting with your county dog warden there. What was it that really drew this issue to your attention? What made you think, hey, I really need to work on this?
Well, it was ridiculous to me when he explained to me that there can be a dog attack, but the dog wardens didn't have the ability to immediately seize that animal. And for me, that was just hearing that, that's ridiculous. So let's just use an example to illustrate this. So if my neighbor's dog attacked me and they didn't have any prior histories, the dog warden didn't have the ability to immediately seize that animal. So what that means is I could have to the very next day walk out my front door and see the very dog that just attacked me, right there next door, and the possibility of it maybe doing it again. So I think that was probably one of the most eye-opening things that was brought to my attention.
Well, and Laura, you were the lead reporter among a team of reporters that investigated this. You found that this is not an infrequent occurrence in Ohio, right?
Right. So there's a requirement that dog bites be reported to the local health department. And there's about 17,000 bites that are reported each year, but it's a gross under-reporting. A lot of people either don't know that they're supposed to report these, or maybe they just don't want to get into a beef with their neighbor over the dog bite, or they might also just think like, well, I don't want anything bad to happen to the dog. So anyway, it's a big under-reporting. And I would say that a small subset of those 17,000 bites are pretty serious attacks that can cause disfigurement, maiming, limb loss, fingers lost, ears, noses. I mean, it's the kind of issue that the media reports in kind of silos. Like you might report on a terrible attack maybe one or two stories, and then you just kind of move on. And what we tried to do is take a real comprehensive look at what's going on, where are the laws weak, where are they failing the victims, how are these attacks affecting people. You know, kids are disproportionately affected, and I think older people are as well. They're just more vulnerable to dog attacks. And it was pretty shocking to me that this is a chronic problem that the law really didn't address.
Now, this new law is called Avery's Law, after Avery Russell. Representative Miller, I'm going to ask you, and Laura, you can weigh in on this too if you want, but briefly tell us who Avery Russell is and how important her experience and her testimony were during this whole legislative process.
Yes, yeah, so Avery Russell is the young lady that is from Reynoldsburg, which kind of abuts my district, but Avery was attacked when she was at a friend's house, you know, with serious injuries, disfigurement. She's had multiple surgeries, and she was just, I would say, just a rock star when she came in. She came in and testified to the committees in both the House and the Senate and talked about her experience. And I think her testimony was critical as far as getting, you know, legislatures to understand the seriousness of this. When they saw this little girl, I believe she's 12. Laura, you can confirm that. But when she came in and provided that testimony, I think it was very, very impactful as the bill moved through the legislative process.
Yeah, Avery's 12, and she's a very brave kid. I mean, I was super impressed with the poise that she showed in testifying in favor of the bill and telling her story. You know, she's also got some really great support from her family, her mom and her grandmother and her aunts and her cousins. You know, when she shows up to testify or for a floor vote, she rolls deep. She's got a lot of support with her.
Beth, what will this new law mean for you as the chief dog warden, your authority and your ability to keep people safe?
As Representative Miller, you know, indicated, it gives us the authority to seize as soon as an incident occurs where someone is injured severely or killed by a dog in our community, whereas before we didn't always have that immediate ability to seize an animal to help keep a neighborhood safe.
I imagine it's been very frustrating as the dog warden not to have that ability to act more swiftly and decisively.
Yes, in the past, it's been not really a law that has supported victims. It's made victims often feel not valued, not cared about. It's left them frightened, feeling in continual danger because a dog that may have attacked them is still in the neighborhood. And while we might put limitations on how that, you know, family is supposed to control the dog, we don't ever have a guarantee. And this way we can seize, remove an animal, take the time to really evaluate the situation, get all parties' information, and make the victim feel safer.
We're talking in this recorded interview about Ohio's new dangerous dog law, and we're also going to talk about a state Supreme Court case that could change how landlords deal with their tenants' pets. Beth, do you have the staff you need to enforce this new law?
No, that's part of the challenges is when laws are put into place, oftentimes there's not a mandated funding that goes along with it to help support those changes. As an organization and Cincinnati Animal Care and Hamilton County, we are looking at how we can bolster our team to be able to better support our residents in these situations.
Representative Miller, when will this new law go into effect?
You know, I believe it's April. I don't have the exact date on it. I'm not sure if Laura reported on that or not. But just to circle back on that previous question, when you talked about the resources,
sure.
One of the things that we did include in the bill was an increase in the license fee for when they register dangerous and vicious dogs. That's doubled. So it went from $50 to it's now $100. And typically those fees go directly to the dog warden's budget in order to, you know, do those increased inspections and things of that nature to make sure that these owners are following the laws, that they have the fencing that they need, that they have the liability insurance that we mandated, which we also put that into the law. Anyone that owns a dangerous or vicious dog, they must carry $100,000 of liability insurance. So we did try to address some of that, you know, that financial concern, because those fees had not been increased for, I believe, decades. Mm.
So that's something you did think about, Representative Miller, that, hey, there might be some more resources needed, and those fees were an attempt to really address that.
Yeah, and kudos to the Dog Wardens Association, because, you know, once again, that was one of the things that they brought forward, you know, during the process. And that's why it was so important to get all the interested parties at the table and get that feedback so we could come up with, in my opinion, an extremely impactful bill.
Yeah. Laura, do you have a sense for when this law will go into effect?
Well, it's 90 days from the time that the governor signed it, which was on December 19th. So whatever the calendar says, probably that would put it at late March.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Laura, I also want to ask you about this case before the Ohio Supreme Court that's related to landlords and renters with pets. Can you tell us the background with that case?
Yeah, this is a case out of Montgomery County in which I think it was in a mobile home park, and some kids were at the mobile home park's common area playground. This is back in 2020, and a boy was injured by a dog that was at the playground. The dog was on a leash being controlled by another kid, and the boy was seriously injured. And the mother of the boy argued that the landlord or the operator of the mobile home park was actually a harborer of this dog and shared responsibility for the dog's behavior under state law. And the property owner is like, no, you know, we're not the harborer. And also says that, you know, if the court does say, yeah, you have some liability for how dogs behave in your common areas, then it's going to be really hard for dog owners to find rental housing, because, you know, landlords will just say, well, I'm not going to rent to dogs or to owners of dogs.
Yeah. Representative Miller, did that come up in the discussions about the vicious dog legislation that we just talked about, this issue of renters and liability and property owners and that sort of thing?
No, that discussion was not a part of this legislation. You know, I assume we'll have to sit back and see where the Supreme Court goes with this and if there's any need for any subsequent legislation.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I do want to mention we reached out to attorneys for the plaintiff and defendant in that Ohio Supreme Court case, and they both declined to be on the program. So do you think, Representative Miller, depending on the outcome of this Supreme Court case, there might need to be some other kind of change in the law, maybe not in the vicious dog law, but in some other part of the revised code?
Possibly. You know, I hate to speculate till we see what kind of works comes out of the case. But yeah, you never know, you know, if there might be some sort of need for clarification.
Mm-hmm. Beth, how often are you and your team called out to rental properties to deal with situations where a tenant's dog or a pet of some kind has injured somebody? I guess I wonder what kind of recourse you have now when something like that happens.
Yeah, so that is actually one of our frequent calls here in Cincinnati. We have a lot of, you know, housing areas where there are either apartments or townhouses that share a lot of common spaces, whether it's a laundry room, hallway, courtyard, et cetera. And we have a very frequent situation where dogs are out in that area and they come into contact with a child and or another adult, and we have a bite reported. Or it's even a dog-to-dog situation. Two dogs that live in the same complex get into an argument, and then people get in between and they get injured and bitten. We just recently had a case where Cincinnati PD was responding to a dog bite in a common area of a little apartment building. And when we went out there, unfortunately, the CPD had to shoot one of the dogs, and then they tased and then shot the second dog while we were on scene because of the nature of the dogs, unfortunately. But this is a very common thing in the city of Cincinnati.
Do you think, Beth, that this might be happening, that this might be common because there are more people kind of concentrated in one building or one complex or one property, more people with dogs? Does that make these scenarios more likely?
Yes, I definitely think it makes it more likely. It also is because a lot of these families, unfortunately, don't have the resources that they need to ensure that the animals have been spayed or neutered, or they've gone through some training classes. And it's, you know, while we are all talking about enforcement, there's a lot of need in our communities for resources for people who own dogs to provide proper care, training, and support. We also have landlords in our county that, believe it or not, they don't even know the names of the people that are renting from them. They're just accepting payment for their monthly rent, and they don't really care what dogs they have.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Do you have thoughts, Beth, on what kind of funding source or resources could be made available to help people with training or care for their pets? I mean, there are so many people with so many different needs. Is this anything you've given some thought to?
Oh, we're giving thought to it every minute of every day, practically, of how we can try to expand resources for people in our community. And it's about, right now, we don't really have the staffing to hit all the areas that we want to. So we're trying to look at targeted areas like Price Hill or Avondale, where we're seeing more of these dog bite or dog attack type situations happening. And then maybe we can make an impact there if we just concentrate on a couple of areas, and then we can learn from that and hopefully expand resources for the rest of the county.
Laura, can you talk more about what kind of implications the Supreme Court case could have for rental property owners and pet owners?
Well, I mean, it really depends on how the court rules, and that's not expected for, several more months. It is a, obviously there's a lot of renters in Ohio, and there's a lot of renters who have dogs. And so this could have, pretty sweeping impact for people. And it certainly, might cause landlords like the ones that Beth's talking about, where they don't even know who they're renting to tighten it up and, get a better handle on who is in their property and what pets they have. If they're facing liability.
And Laura, this case, it kind of hinges on how the court interprets what a harborer is. Is that right? I mean, can you talk a little bit more about that?
I think Beth might be able to explain what a harborer is under the state law a little bit better than me, but it's like a owner, keeper, or harborer of a dog is how the law is written. And, owner is pretty easy. Keeper is a little more open to interpretation, as is harborer. But it's basically whoever's supposed to be in charge of the dog.
Do you have thoughts on that, Beth?
Yeah, I think that's some of the challenges that we have in the state of Ohio is because we do have the terms harborer, keeper, and owner. And generally, someone that is a harborer is somebody basically that's a keeper that's providing care for an animal while an owner may not be available. I'm not familiar with the case in Montgomery, but I would say it's very interesting and very concerning. It will be an interesting outcome with the Supreme Court, because when you're looking at common areas, if your dog if I'm walking my dog, I'm in a common area and I'm the owner of the dog, but the apartment complex is the owner of the common area, then now is the apartment complex going to be responsible for that? You know, it's a very complicated situation. So
I have another question for you, Representative Miller. When you were working on this legislation that we talked about earlier related to dangerous or vicious dogs, did the issue of dog fighting come up in that?
No, actually, that didn't come up at all in any of my discussions as the bill worked through the legislature. There was no talk of dog fighting at all. So I'm not sure how that might, you know, work into the whole discussion or affect any of the things that the Supreme Court is looking at. But certainly if we had to take a look at that language dealing with, you know, owner, keeper, harbor, you know, based on what the Supreme Court says, we could do that.
Laura, when you did all your investigation, did you explore whether dog fighting leads to more dog attacks, dogs that are trained to, you know, to fight other dogs?
No, I mean, I focused almost entirely just on just regular dog owners and the victims of these attacks. I would say that one of the reasons why I think Kevin Miller and his colleagues were successful in getting Avery's Law passed is because it was very surgical. It avoided becoming, you know, what State House reporters call a Christmas tree bill, where you just keep hanging more stuff on it. Had they gone to dog fighting or leashing laws or kennel standards or, you know, anything dog related, it could have really bogged down the bill and maybe doomed it. So I think just the way that it was focused was probably a big recipe for success. And I would say that in 2012, Ohio changed the dog laws away from breed specific, you know, like, you know, pit bulls are inherently dangerous, away from that and focus more on the deed, not the breed. So more of the behavior of the dog, but it left in these loopholes like the one free kill. And I think that Avery's Law continues to focus on the behavior of the dogs, not the breed. And that was another ingredient for success.
That seems so important. Was that something you were really focused on, Representative Miller? Because I think if I'm remembering correctly, the dog in this mobile home park that was that's at the center of the state Supreme Court case was a Cocker Spaniel. I mean, it was, you know, not necessarily a dog that people think of as inherently dangerous or something.
Yeah, it was. And you know what? I'm going to throw back some kudos to Laura here, because I think because of her reporting and how she shed a light on these instances that were occurring all across the state, I had multiple representatives come to me and say, hey, Kevin, this is a great bill. This is a huge issue in my district. So I think just the media played a significant role in this as well by highlighting this, because reps all across the state got behind this legislation. And as I said, it was pretty surgical, so it didn't open up Pandora's box for people to come out against it, because we dealt with those specific issues. So I think that was another reason why, you know, this bill was able to move fairly quickly, I'll say, legislatively speaking.
Well, sure. I mean, Laura, I think you mentioned in your follow-up reporting that the bill was signed into law 10 months after your investigation was published.
That's right. And, you know, what's interesting about it is that after the 2012 revamping of the law, there was a terrible fatality in Dayton. Clonda Ritchie died in 2014, and she'd done everything right. She had, you know, called the dog warden multiple times. She had, you know, she was very afraid of her neighbor's dog. She was killed. And that prompted six different lawmakers to try and change the dog law. And none of them succeeded, in part because some of it became kind of a Christmas tree bill. They didn't have a comprehensive look at how common these things were and how widespread and how it, dog bites and dog attacks can happen to anybody, anywhere. It's not, you know, a specific neighborhood or a specific person or specific breed. Like you said, it was a Cocker Spaniel in this case that's before the Ohio Supreme Court.
I do want to give some kudos to my colleagues, Representative Cecil Thomas and Representative Meredith Lawson Rowe. They actually introduced two separate pieces of legislation as well. And what we did was took a look at their legislation, and we incorporated some of those aspects into my bill as well, including the fact that Representative Lawson Rowe, who represents Avery's area, her bill was actually named Avery's Law, and we turned and actually amended my bill to include that as the name for my bill, along with some provisions out of that bill as well. So it was really a collaborative bipartisan bill.
Always good to hear about politicians working together to make things better for their constituents. Thank you so much. I've been talking with Ohio State Representative Kevin Miller, a Newark Republican, Cincinnati Animal Care Chief Dog Warden Beth Ward, and Cincinnati Inquirer reporter Laura Bischoff. Thank you all so much for your time today. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez-Cornu. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.